we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We are here today. And when I say we, I mean Elizabeth and I.
Yeah.
Just the two of us. Sans your parents. Mm-hmm. It feels like we're on our first date when we don't have your parents around. Do you remember when we would like never go home if they weren't there? We had this rule, very Christian upbringing, would never be in the house alone while we were dating if someone wasn't there, which I actually think is a great rule.
Yeah, it's a great rule.
Just very uncomfortable for a while.
It's very inconvenient.
Very inconvenient. Mm-hmm. But we're in a room all
we
alone.
We can be alone now.
It's fine to be alone with a ton of cameras, which is, that's weird. So,
yeah, that could get real weird.
So anyway, we're actually here to talk. Before we get into all this details, we're going to talk really actually about marriage, which is exciting and also hard to talk about, but we're going to talk about it. And just wanted to say thank you to everybody who has taken a second to rate and subscribe and even tune into and leave a comment for the podcast. It's so helpful. It's immensely helpful for the algorithm that we're a part of, and it helps a ton. So if this has been helpful, that's a way to say thank you, is to just even rate the podcast or leave a comment, subscribe, and we give new content usually weekly, so that will come to the top of your feed. And if you want to watch content, you can head over to YouTube as well at any time. But we just got done a couple weeks back,
A month. Yeah.
By the time this comes out, it'll be almost a couple months, I'm sure. But we had our motherhood retreat, which was just outstanding. So many wonderful folks we got to connect with and meet. And we're kind of still coming off the heels of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at that retreat, though,
we need to have a backstory of why
I was even
talking there.
Yeah. Well,
no, it's okay. Keep going.
One of the sessions you shared and bravely tackled the passage, Proverbs 31.
Which is stupid. It wasn't a good idea. The whole time I had to give so many caveats before I could even say anything. So everyone knew, like, I'm not going to weaponize this against you.
I'm not going to tell you how to be a completely unattainable woman. No, I think it is unfortunate that passage, I feel like, is not talked about as much anymore because I think it was misunderstood for a long time. But there's a lot of gold in there. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how you used it, of just pulling out different attributes that women can hold that are greatly impactful. And you took it from the angle of how women like that have impacted you in your life. So you did it very, very well.
Thank you.
I think what was maybe surprising is the amount of feedback that you got, we got, of how incredibly helpful that teaching was. Mm. And a lot of women saying it felt like you represented our husbands to us.
Yeah.
And so really, I think the thing that was really hitting people with that was all the stuff around marriage and how the things you were calling out are so applicable in the marriage relationship. And one of them was you talked about the importance of bringing care before criticism. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like the major takeaway for most women. And you could just feel in the room, women being like, shoot, I'm really good at the criticizing part, not very good at the care part sometimes. And so we're just going to kind of talk about that today. What does that look like? What does that even mean? How do we do that in the chaos of life? So why don't you, I mean, you shared so much about that point at the retreat, but
it was actually the shortest point out of all of them. As far as length goes or words, it was the shortest point. But
interesting.
But it probably felt like a lot.
Well, yeah, because I think it just hits home of like, oh, man, yes, that's who I want to be as a wife.
Sure.
But this goes both ways. I mean, how often are we just busy? I mean, just if you just put that on the table alone, not to mention other life stressors or deep hurts in marriage. Just busyness can make us move so quickly that we are saying things in a critical way and not even taking a minute to stop and be careful with how and what we say. But will you just kind of explain like some of what you talked about, and then I'll be thoroughly convicted and then we can have a conversation back and forth about it.
Yeah, I think we kind of pulled out four different things to help us do this. So just stay tuned because we'll use some structure of like, care before criticism. How do we actually do that? What does that look like? And I think for this episode, we're talking about stuff that we didn't talk about at the retreat. And we're talking about stuff of like our lived experience of how it's more possible to bring care before criticism instead of the other way around. So I think it's important. There's this phrase in a certain translation in Proverbs 31. It says, it's the very last verse. It says, for she has become a radiant woman. And the pre-phrase before that is give her the credit that she is due, for she has become a radiant woman. And so I was just talking about the impact that radiant women have had on my life and the fact that radiant women have changed who I am, changed what I aspire to be, who I desire to become, primarily through you, my wife, Elizabeth, and then also through my mom and through your mom and through other women like that who have impacted my life deeply. And I think many incredible women get the credit for the incredible men that we see in the world. We don't always see that or say that, but I think that's actually very true. It's also important to highlight that you and I don't have what we would call an easy, convenient, simple marriage. Like it is not, we're both very passionate people. We both have strong opinions, strong feelings. And so if you're hearing this and you're like, these folks are going to give me all this stuff from an angle of shame, guilt, and you just need to do this. Like, no. We don't have that dynamic. We have to work on our marriage a lot.
Yep.
And we have to use daily practices, principles, and apologies to get through
a
normal
day.
And I think
that is the majority of people have. Marriage is hard work. And people don't talk about that in the beginning stages. But you have to fight to have a healthy marriage in any, even if you naturally get along or naturally have things in common. I don't know that, I don't know that an easy marriage exists. Maybe I'm wrong in that.
I mean, I think some dynamics are easier than others.
Yeah,
I think the
truth
is like some people just don't have certain dynamics and it does probably give a sense that is easier. But I think hard is hard for anybody. So your hard might be different than our hard, but it still feels hard to you.
Yeah.
So I just think everyone has their different dynamics, and everyone has the invitation from Jesus and from life to say, will you grow and become a fuller, better, richer human through having to die to certain parts of yourself and grow. Like that's the invitation for anybody. And whether that's in one area or the other, it's, there's still a death involved.
Yeah.
So maybe to answer or respond to your question, there's a verse, Proverbs 31, 11 and 12, where that point was taken from. Just says her husband can trust her and she will greatly enrich his life. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. So the point was, yes, a radiant woman will bring care before criticism. And I was just sharing that in my experience, when you, Elizabeth, bring care before criticism, it's life-giving. But criticism before care is crushing. When there's criticism before there's care or understanding or trying to understand maybe the situation or my perspective or whatever, and you come in with just criticism before care, it deflates me. And I don't think I'm alone by that in any way. And it doesn't mean that this is just wives to husbands. Sometimes this is husbands to wives. But it's a deflating element. And I think when someone entrusts their heart to you, like this verse says, they need your care. When you entrust your heart to your spouse is also responsible to start caring for you in a certain way. And you have information on them, which is really very accessible to use towards crushing them. And so that's the tricky part, is we have all of this information that when you trigger us, the other spouse, we can use this very sensitive, fragile information to crush you. And that goes both ways. And so I think it's really, you know, important for us to highlight that this is something that we have to be aware of and brings a lot of pain to our marriages, and really can also, on the flip side, on the reverse, bring a lot of life to our marriages. I would also say, you know, on this topic of talking on Proverbs 31, I was sitting just morning time probably more than a year ago now, but sitting down and this idea came to me, and originally it was more of like a podcast idea, like, why don't we just talk about this on the podcast? And then as we started talking, and I told Elizabeth, I was like, I think there might be some stuff here. And then she was like, I think you should maybe think about sharing that at the motherhood retreat. And then I was thinking, that's the stupidest thing in the world to talk to 800 ladies about Proverbs 31. Like, I just was like, that's not smart.
No, I think I said, you should absolutely share this with a whole bunch of caveats up front because a lot of women hear Proverbs 31 and their defenses go up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that when we're honest, it's so much easier to give criticism in place of care. It's so easy. I mean, I can criticize so much more easily than I can care, because criticism is easy. It's quick. It's obvious. I think it's really obvious to you, the other spouse, where your spouse is messing up. I also think that it's really interesting how, you know, your husbands, as an example, I was saying to the ladies, and I think this is true for anyone listening that is a wife, your husband actually does want to help. He does love you. He does care for you. And even though he doesn't always fully admit it, he is actually more aware than you might think of his weaknesses. But oftentimes, at least in my experience, in our experience, I'm aware of that, but you are so hyper aware of it. I think a spouse has a window into your life that you don't always do. As a person. And I think they can see you better oftentimes than you can see yourself. And that's a really helpful thing if it's given in care, but it is absolutely devastating when it's not.
Can we talk about that for a minute? Like the idea of criticism, oftentimes we think of that as it's 100% bad, right? So as you were talking,
there is constructive criticism.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the two different types.
Which I did talk about, by the way, that there is a gift in that.
Yeah. And that's needed, like, that verse in Proverbs that says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Yeah. Like, we need to be able to be in close enough relationship where there's a bit of a mirror to be able to see the parts of us that God needs to redeem or the parts we need to grow. The actual definition of criticism is the expression of disapproval of someone or something based on perceived faults or mistakes. And I think I think we need to talk about the two types of criticism because they're both important. It is so easy in marriage, and we fall into this trap all the time, for criticism to begin to be vocalized or communicated with our body language over things that really we need to learn to cover with grace and absorb. because nobody is perfect. Everybody has a bad day. And we are close enough and have an intimate relationship with our spouse to be able to get really annoyed by those things that maybe the Spirit is inviting us to just have grace and mercy and
well, when you tell me, when you tell me the truth, which I need to hear, but when you tell me out of annoyance, irritation, belittling, hurtful, it's not motivating, it's the opposite, it's damaging.
Yeah.
I'm not motivated to live into the truth that you're expressing to me. I'm actually more this is my personality too. I'm more like contrarian at that point. I'm like, well, I'm not doing this just because you're being a jerk about it. Like, I don't like how you're treating me. And so therefore your truth will not be absorbed as a way of not complying to what you're saying. So I think that's another part of it, is to realize a lot of the times the truth is that it's the truth. It is real. You're not wrong. But I think how you deliver your findings is the most important part of it. Do you do it in a place of care? Or does it come out of annoyance, irritation? I've just had enough. You've done this for the last time. You always speak to me this way, or you always handle it this way, whatever the thing is.
Which is often how things come out.
Because,
for us. But I think for a lot of couples, I mean, how many couples, you're just around them and you can feel the tension because of the nagging comments they're making at each other because they haven't really had the tough conversations. But it seeps out whether it's directly or indirectly. And all of it feels like annoyance that leads to criticism. But what you're getting at is that does not mean that there is no space ever to constructively, in love and care, criticize, so to speak, but to give constructive criticism. Because that is something all of us need to be humble enough to receive from the people who deeply love us and are close with us and are doing it in a place of love, not a place of just being. I wish there was maybe a better word for the other type of criticism. I'm not
constructive
thinking of
criticism.
Words. No, the other, like,
brutal criticism.
Or I'm not even thinking brutal. I'm thinking of the nagging criticism.
Yeah. The constant critiques, the annoyances, almost like there's that verse in Proverbs again. It's better to be in a house alone than with a contentious, nagging wife. Now,
isn't it say a corner of the rooftop?
I can't remember fully.
Oh, that gets me every time.
But it's like, whoa, that's obviously, again, it's not just, this is not just.
Isn't there another verse about like a constant dripping rain?
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. So Proverbs has a lot to say about, and those are all about women. I mean, we're taking this more from both. I mean, I feel like women are really good at the more subtle, annoying kind. And I think, and can be harsh at the same time.
But can I tell you why this is really tricky? Because one thing I've been learning lately, I don't even know if I've told you this. This has been a recent awareness. When you're communicating to me about something, whether that's our kids, a problem, a situation, even though you're a very logical person, you are communicating how a situation makes you feel. So you're saying to me, this happened and that happened. And you are really good with words. So we have this talk all the time, and I'm going to try not to get triggered while we're having this conversation. But you'll often say, like, you'll use dramatic language to get the point across that this is making you feel this way. Well, when you bring your feelings to my brain, which is way more logical and problem solving based, which is that is a pretty stereotypical setup for men and women. I am trying to hear your words logically. But you're not asking for me to hear them logically. You're asking for me to relay back to you how you feel. And I am supposed to, in my own brain, have enough awareness, which for so long I haven't, and still I'm learning so much. I'm supposed to be able to turn that off and meet you in the feeling. But I'm approaching it like, well, you said this thing doesn't work for you. So we're going to change it because you just told me it didn't work. And to me, a lot of the times it is black and white. It's not this like crazy, confusing thing. It's pretty simple. You don't like that. This situation's not working with our kids. That dynamic or that setup's not helping. So let's change it. And I'm not even a problem solver in the sense like I only go to problem solving by nature, but it is interesting that women often communicate what they feel, not necessarily always what they mean. And that's tricky sometimes because it's not that you don't mean parts of what you're saying, but you're also communicating how the thing makes you feel more than it is even the logistics of it.
Yeah.
And so that has to be highlighted because I think there's so much miscommunication in that. For mm-hmm. I know for us, but also in general, there's a lot of miscommunication in that. So I don't know if you agree, but I have noticed.
I do. Well, I'm thinking of like practical example of it is one thing for if you, and this may or may not be a real life example from our past week.
That means it is. That means it is.
It is one thing. You've been really busy. Life at home has been very busy.
Again, oftentimes, I'm going to try not to get triggered by this conversation.
This could go both ways. Me too.
Oh, cool. That's great.
That's the case, we are not our most calm, kind, gracious selves.
No, there's no margin for anything else.
This is a nice way of me saying you've been extra edgy and irritable lately. It's different.
Yeah, I just get when shortened
I
to the point.
Come to you and say, you're being so rude. You're not caring about me. You're not caring about our family. You're being so over the top irritable. That is very different than me coming to you and saying, hey, I know you have a ton going on at work and you have a ton going on at home. And I recognize you have no margin. You're unintentionally being really irritable with all of us. Can we just talk about it? Can you just be aware of that?
Intentional is stopping me from being intentional.
But you see the difference? Like one is true criticism of your character. And one is acknowledging that I care for you as a person. I recognize there's a lot going on. I believe in your goodwill, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But hey, I need you to be aware that this is how it's feeling to everybody else around you. That's constructive criticism versus I'm attacking your character because I'm annoyed at how it's making me feel.
Yes.
To your point, to what you were saying.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I also think that it's challenging. That is still a hard pill to swallow when there's not. And you did a little bit in this example, but I think that's a harder pill to swallow when there isn't a sincere care and gracious understanding. Like, for example, I think you're really good at knowing what to say, but it's not always from a place of care. It's from a place of, I know I have to say this so I can say the hard thing. Does that make sense?
Because I wait too long, which we're starting to get into the 4 points. So, but to your point, I will be the first to say, I move through the world seeing everything that could be better. That's like the lens I look at the world through. And I have to be hyper aware of that because it comes from a place of love. My noticing what could be improved and my comments of criticism are actually motivated by love in my own heart. My motives are not always pure.
You are reading
because
a woman,
I want my family and the people around me to be the best versions of themselves. If I see a way in which something could be better, it's very easy for me to vocalize it. But how that actually feels to the people I'm closest with, if I'm not hyper aware of first saying encouraging words, it feels like all mom ever says, all Elizabeth ever says is the areas that I could be better. And it feels like just nothing but criticism. It does not feel motivated by love. So this is a huge area of weakness for me, of growth opportunity for me, whatever way you want to frame it, that I think I was pretty deaf and blind to in our first, I don't know, 15 years of marriage. I'm giving myself a few years to have been maybe
we've been
starting
for 18
to grow.
Years in February, so probably 17. No, I'm just kidding. No, I know.
But I was very unaware of this. I think our kids are really helping me become aware of this.
They can tell you how. Well, yeah, because they, as a spouse, I think your spouse can become white noise sometimes.
Yeah.
That's just what they say because that's just how they deal with it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's a devastation to that when we do that because they're telling us the truth that we need to hear. And I, you know, to the point, and obviously we're harping on an area that you right now obviously know and are very humble about, you know, growing in. But I would say it's really important to highlight that for me, for everybody, I'm the man I am because you are the woman that you are. And you were the example in this teaching of someone who has helped me become this way. Become a much better man. Help me become aware of the things I needed healing and growing in. having a line to help in firmness, to help me not just give in to just not doing the hard work of the inner journey. Cause honestly, it's just so much easier to skip out. There's lots of times when I think it's a lot easier to just not. I mean, I see the temptation and I see why people just bail on wanting to go on the inner journey, seeking any sort of emotional, spiritual healing from your past and the things you've experienced. I get it. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. It's also one of the reasons, you've been one of the reasons why I've been able to do that. So that's a big deal. I just think that we can crush our spouse unintentionally by wanting to help them and we make the journey harder. What is it? Luke 4:22. I love this verse. They were amazed, speaking of the people, they were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. And in the teaching, I was just talking about how gracious words are actually healing.
Yeah.
Gracious words heal your relationship. When you're gracious and you actually take time to think and talk in a way that is gracious, it is actually healing to your marriage.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure where you are, but I want to remind you, women specifically, because I'm a husband, so I can't speak to anyone else, but to the ladies listening, your husband actually really does want to make you happy. He does. Mm. He doesn't always know how to, and he doesn't always know what to do. But the guys I talk to on a regular basis, both friends and acquaintances, they all have this common denominator, which is, I really want to make my wife happy. I don't always know how. I don't always have the resources available, or there's a lot of complexities within our relationship or damage that has occurred to where we are not able to see each other on the same playing field. And I want to make her happy. I just don't know how. I've already broken trust, or I've already hurt her feelings, or I've already created these weird dynamics, or whatever the case is. And so I think it's just a good thing for us to remember. So why don't we maybe, because we're basically teetering through all these four points.
We got to get into the fourth thing. So why don't we talk about
how do we actually bring care before criticism? We know that that's like a possibility, but we just want to maybe walk through four specific, like, actual tangible things, because it's one thing to talk about this stuff. It's another thing to just have some tools. So this isn't prescriptive. Like, you can do this stuff and still have a really bad marriage. This is just for you to try. This is for you to say, hey, I need some tools. Where can we start? Here's what's been helpful for us. And again, this is from a place of us really having to work through a lot of this. This isn't a place of us being experts in any of this field, but really wanting to try. So how do we actually do that? The first one, and I love it because it's biblical, but is, beware of the little foxes. You've heard this before. There's marriage books on this, but what's that verse, honey? You said you had it. As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
Yeah, it's Song of Songs. And in chapter 2, and I pulled this out in the Message translation because I just liked how it was said. It said, "Then you must protect me from the foxes, foxes on the prowl, foxes who would like nothing better than to get into our flowering garden." And at this point in Song of Songs, the couple is going back and forth. This is the woman speaking, and they're talking about this beautiful, inviting garden that they have that is for them. And, you know, the little foxes, without diving deep into it, they would be like areas of sin or areas where the enemy just wants to just implant those things, where criticism becomes crushing criticism versus care and constructive. And I love that it says the little foxes.
Yes.
Because so often what we see in our own marriage and in the marriages of those in the community around us is, yes, sometimes there are very big, bigger than foxes, big things in a marriage that have caused deep pain and destruction. And we're not discounting those. And so many listening, that is your lived experience, whether it's infidelity or pornography addiction or deeply rooted trauma that has not had a chance to heal or really difficult family situations. I mean, the big boxes. But so often what gets us in these cycles of just being critical of each other are the little foxes, the little things that want to come in and ruin the garden, the little, like we already mentioned, life moving so fast, you're just, everybody's on edge because you're just stressed and tired. And it's really convenient to take that stress out on each other or view each other as the root of the problem. But if you take a minute and slow down and recognize, maybe it's just because I haven't gotten enough sleep, I have no margin, and we've had no time to connect. I think busyness is a huge one that the enemy uses in any family, but especially in a marriage. Or maybe it's that you've not been aware of the little things, the little resentments that are building up and are feeling much bigger than if you had talked about them 3 months ago and just said, hey, this hurt my feelings. You're doing this a lot. And I don't think you have any idea how it makes me feel. Maybe it's something that you could have had a conversation about months ago, but now it's become a fox trying to wreck the garden. And so I think it's, we have to be hyper aware of what are those little things, and they will change season by season in your marriage. It will be very different pre-kids than it is with a newborn baby, than it is with elementary school kids who are playing sports, than it is with the stage of teenagers. Like, it will change as your life grows and your family grows. The foxes might look different. But I think we always have to be aware of it's so often the little things that can either destroy a marriage or become the things that make a marriage really unhappy.
I couldn't agree more. I think maybe to speak to anybody that's in a really unhappy cycle.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, I get so discouraged by a few things. One, the amount of people that quickly get divorced after they get married early, the 20s, 30s, like the amount of people that get married and stay married for 2 or 3 years, that's been super discouraging. Yeah. And I'm not, again, an expert enough to say, oh, here's the reasons why, here's culture, here's all this. Like, there's so many myriads of reasons. But one thing that we know is some listening are going through a divorce right now, or they are in the middle of separation, or they're in the middle of just being divorced and they're trying to find center. And I just want to say that you're in a lot of pain and a lot of confusion and a lot of overwhelm. And I can only say with so much empathy that I understand. I mean, we do understand how painful that is to an extent. At the same time, I also want to give some hope and perspective that this doesn't always have to be this way. Now, you have to, you really do have to. I don't mean the divorce part or those who are in separation. I mean, I'm talking about if you're in a marriage right now and you're really just truly unhappy, I think that you have to remember that your definition of happy really does need to realign with what Jesus's definition of happy is, if this is going to be something that you have for the remainder of your life. That doesn't mean you can't have your needs met and you can't have a good marriage and all that stuff. But so often we are taking or adopting the world's terms of happiness.
That, or that marriage is for our happiness, which is not actually.
Which is actually not true. It's actually for your formation. It's for your holiness more than it's more for your happiness. And if you can start to redefine those things, and by the way, if you keep chasing happiness, you will keep, say you it's ended in divorce because you weren't happy. Well, literally, this will be the same thing in any other future relationship you have, because every relationship will never give you fully what you would hope for it to have. But that said, happiness, I'm just thinking, and I can only use our example. So in our marriage, do you make me happy? Absolutely. Do you make my life hard? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And do I make your life hard? So hard. I probably make your life harder than you make my life hard. But truly, the immaturity of that idea that I'm going to look to a person or a situation to make me fully happy is an underdeveloped view of life and how reality works. Nobody, no person is going, no relationship is going to fully fulfill you. Jesus is so clear about that. I also think for us, why faith is so important and foundational is because I really feel like my soul is satiated in God. And if it's not, then I look towards everything to make me happy and nothing ever does, ever. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it's all to say that those little foxes matter because I think they play into your perceived happiness. I don't think anyone's going to ever make you fully happy. But I know that when I say something rude and then I apologize to you because that's your love language in many ways and make it right, that heals something that was broken and it starts to build in beauty and good into our relationship and our marriage in a way that wasn't there before. And so if you're here hearing this, I would say it's really important to understand that you don't have to stay where you're at. You really don't. It takes a ton of work, a ton of humility, a ton of time, but you can start sowing in these little moments. And I'd say it just starts little. If you said something rude, just say, hey, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. That was rude. It might just be that for a long time, for months, even years, and just healing the things that you say that you know you shouldn't say. And then it's going to bring in more things that we're going to talk about in a minute, but positive words and encouraging. So I would just encourage wherever you're at, just remember that this is a stage, this is a season. It doesn't always have to stay there. So beware of the little foxes. But the second one I think bleeds into that really well. So I just want to highlight that, which is believe in their goodwill. Mm-hmm. We have to believe in our spouse's goodwill, meaning most of you did not marry truly evil people. Now there are some, and I want to be super clear that there are people, certain people that are just truly really wounded, pain-filled, hurt people that do only want to hurt people, really.
And that does happen. So it does. We just want to acknowledge that. Yeah. And those are tough, tough situations.
And we see it. We see it often.
And so we don't want to come across simplistic or not acknowledging that. But I think in the majority of cases, especially if your spouse knows Jesus, has access to the Holy Spirit, most of us didn't marry truly evil people. And over time, we can unintentionally treat our spouse as though misstep they make is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, it's so helpful when I take a step back and say, I do believe in his goodwill. I do believe, like what you said earlier, you do want to see me flourish and to see me thrive. And there is not ill will behind every irritable comment you make, you know? And I think sometimes we just need that reminder that my spouse is a good-willed person with a sinful nature just like mine. But at the end of the day, they want to grow. They want to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably going to be a lot slower than I think it should be or want it to be. But the same goes with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm slow to change too.
Yeah.
I think that, and that doesn't mean that you don't talk about stuff. But when we are going to talk about things that are difficult or ways that we're hurting each other, if that's not in our framework, they're going to be destructive conversations, not helpful ones.
Oh, sure. Sure. And I think different people have different dispositions. So I think it's important to say some people just naturally believe in other people's goodwill, meaning you don't have to work on it. Some people are like, no, I genuinely think most people are good. And that's great. That's helpful. You believe the best in a lot of people. I think with our spouse, though, even if you're that disposition, that can wear off over time and it can be wearing. So I wouldn't say that I always, even in our dynamic, I don't always have a hard time believing in your goodwill. I wouldn't say that's where it comes from for me, but I get really irritated or annoyed when you're not being the person that I know you can be, you know, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it all just depends on the dynamic and the person, but I think it's really important to think they're probably not wanting to be the version of themselves they're being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and Elizabeth tells me this often because you're often surprised, honey, when I'm like, I know that I need to grow in this area. I know I don't want to respond this way, or no, I don't want to have that attitude towards you or the kids. Like, it's so interesting how I forget to say that, but how helpful that is to you. Now, I know that's not everyone's dynamic, but that is so interesting to me, how by me vocalizing the areas that I know I need to change for you anyway, specifically, helps you in a unique way that I'm always surprised by.
You know what? I wonder what some of that could come from. I think we've talked about it a few times on here. I know my mom has taught about it a lot. But in our very identity as women, back in the book of Genesis and the meanings of certain words, I'm not going to unpack the whole thing. She does a masterful job teaching it. But, you know, women have, it's been unfortunately translated as women are helpers.
Mm-hmm.
And really that word in the, is it Greek or Hebrew?
I think it's Greek.
I think it's Greek. Is Izar. Yeah. We say Izar. But the language around it is actually like two warriors in a battle, mm-hmm. fighting back to back. So they would go back to back and have a much better chance at survival.
Mm.
And innate in our very nature as women and in our God-given identity is this desire to help and to protect and to fight back to back for our spouse, with our spouse, for their good, for all of our good. There is this God-given identity in women to come alongside and help in this fierce, beautiful way, not in a, in the unfortunate way it has been taught in the past of like, well, my husband's a contractor and I just carry the tool bag. Like, that's not what that means. And
that's a terrible visual.
No, but it, Tim Keller gave that visual and it's always stuck with me of like, that's how was taught for a long time, or we perceived it or whatever it might be, but it's not actually what the scriptures mean.
Sure.
So I think some of that where we as women especially need to be so careful about believing in our spouse's goodwill and not being critical is recognizing we do have this responsibility and this role to come alongside and help, to point out the areas that do actually need some growth and some change. And husbands have a responsibility to recognize that is also a God-given role from women and need to be able to receive it at times and listen. But I think it's the little foxes, it's the not believing in the goodwill that our husbands just drown us out because we're just that nagging that Proverbs talks about, the like constant dripping of a roof. They can't hear us when
husbands
that's happening.
Also aren't really gracious a lot of the times when that happens over time.
Yeah. But to what you're saying, when you say to me, hey, I want you to know I do see this, I feel like I can exhale. I'm wondering here, is that because of that God-given, like it's in me to want to help and to see you succeed and thrive and grow? And so it's so easy for me to feel like I've got to point it out. He's got to see that he's doing this thing.
I think you might have a special gift in that.
I for sure have a special
gift in it.
I don't
think everyone's situation. But
I do, but I don't think I'm alone in that.
I don't think you're alone.
You are able to say to me, hey, I want you to know I see this. It is so easy for me to back off and say, okay. And to be gracious that it's not happening, it's not changing right away.
Yeah.
Because you've acknowledged I do actually want to grow in this area.
Well, and on the flip side, to be very transparent without oversharing, when I don't admit it, you become quite oppositional and intense and fierce about it. And
that is my shadow side.
Well, it's not even that.
It is though.
Well, it is, but that's not even what I'm trying to highlight. I'm trying to highlight that there is a beauty and an ease that comes about when you start believing in your spouse's goodwill. And that's the point. So how do we bring care before criticism? I think first we have to be aware of those little foxes. Mm-hmm. We have to believe in their goodwill. Thirdly, you have to find what you can encourage. So a question for you to ask as a spouse today, as you're listening to this, what can you encourage? There is stuff. And maybe it's really because you're in a bad spot. It is as simple as thank you for taking out the garbage, or thank you for doing the dishes, or thank you for being my spouse. Like, it doesn't even have to be, domestic chores.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be domestic. Like, oh, he came home and changed the kids' diapers. Like, that, you don't have to thank him for that. He's a dad. It's part of his responsibility too. That said though, I think taking time to acknowledge what can you encourage truthfully, because the question came up, actually, we did this at the live Q&R. So if you missed that episode, when we were at the Motherhood Retreat, I think that was one of the questions, right? Wasn't it one of like,
yes,
what do you do?
What
when
do
you
I
can't?
Do when there's nothing I can encourage my husband in? And my answer was, very likely you will be able to find one thing and mm-hmm. start really simple. And I think I use the example of like, does he hug your kids? Say, I'm so grateful you're affectionate with our daughter. Does he go to work every day? Maybe there's 1,000 things behind that. You wish he had a different job. You wish he didn't work so much. You wish he worked harder. You wish he made more money, whatever it is. But does he get up and go to work every day? Mm. Thank him for providing for your family and getting up and going to work every day. Like looking that, it shifts things when we are looking first through the lens of what can I encourage? It's that idea of there's a bunch mm-hmm. of psychology around it, even with our kids, for every like correction we give, yes. there should be way more encouragements.
It's like 1 to 10 or something.
Yeah. It's a crazy ratio. Mm. But that is just true of all of us. I think of Proverbs 18:21 says death and life are in the power of the tongue. And just this idea that our words are not neutral ever. They basically either bring death or they bring life. And I think often we discount the power of our words. You think about how did God create the world with his words? He spoke the earth into existence. Yeah. Like words are powerful, both ours and the spirits and the enemies. Like words are huge. And so just taking that time to think like, okay, where am I sowing words of life? Because it's mm-hmm. so easy to sow words of death. And then also in Proverbs 16:24, it says that they're healing to the bones, that words of encouragement are healing to the bones. And I did a little study, try to just understand that better from like a neuroscience perspective. And there's all this research on when we hear an encouraging word, it's an instant dopamine hit to our brains. Mm. And I just think God knew what he was doing with that, like with how much the scriptures talk about our words. And there are oftentimes warnings against our not kind words, at least Proverbs mm-hmm. is a lot of warning. Mm-hmm. But then that scripture in Luke, I think it was, that you already referenced.
They were surprised, amazed.
Yeah, amazed, which means
that is gracious speech.
That was not the norm of how people talk.
No, that's true. That's true.
So yeah, I think just like learning a whole language of encouragement and looking through a lens of encouragement of, man, where can I be encouraging first so that when a constructive criticism does need to be made, when I need to bring up that something hurt my feelings or something's not working well, there's a whole bank of encouraging words. And I'll be the first to say, again, this is not a strength of mine whatsoever. Like this is, we are sharing what we/me.
We all need room.
Is currently learning, but that idea that things that we choose to practice, you don't practice something on accident. You choose to practice. Think about like any sport somebody plays. Mm-hmm. You intentionally plan a time to be on a team, to go to a practice, to get better at something. If you're trying to train for a marathon, you follow a training schedule, not because
you remember
feel
when
like
ran
it.
A marathon?
Ugh.
We ran a marathon, everyone. We
for
did
our
this
10-year anniversary.
10-year anniversary in San Francisco. We were like, let's run a marathon. Actually, it was my idea to just
it
do
was.
It myself.
It's your
fault. And then you were like, we should do this together. And then I was like, okay. And at the time, Birdie was recently sick from that moment. And so we even like had on our little bibs, like for Birdie. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And we decided to go away for the 10-year anniversary and hang out in San Francisco for a few days before, which was the worst plan because the whole time we're anticipating 26.2 miles on Sunday. Just wait, you have to wake
that.
Up at 3
Can't
in the morning.
Eat that.
it was absolutely terrible, but we did it. Elizabeth beat me by 10 minutes. I don't want to talk about it. There's a lot of frustration there. Anyway, yes, we did it. We trained for a marathon together.
Yeah.
And it was arduous. It was so much work. Those 20 mile Saturdays were just like, okay, wake up.
Every
what's your on your
Saturday.
List? 20 miles today. You remember we were, instead of like those goo packs, we were drinking straight maple syrup. Do you know how hard it is when you're hot and running to drink maple syrup? Like some people are like, that sounds great. It's
horrible.
The worst.
I still can't eat oatmeal with bananas because that's what we would eat before the training runs.
Gosh.
I still can't do it.
Gosh.
But to the point that didn't happen on accident. That was planning. That was arranging care for our kids. That was driving to a place where we could run that distance. That was planning the whole day to do nothing afterwards because we have to recover.
Yeah. Ice baths.
But the idea that when we choose to practice something, it doesn't have to be, I think so often we're waiting to feel like it, especially in our culture. I have to feel like I want to say nice things. No, I think often we have to choose to say nice things because a practice over time becomes a habit. And over time, a habit is what shapes a character for good or bad. And really, it's our character that shapes a relationship. Both characters involved. One person can't be the only one on the hook. But I know that when you are choosing to do these things, and when you are sharing with me how God is working in your life, and when you are humble and apologizing to me, I immediately want to do the same thing. It doesn't it doesn't have the adverse effect of making me hard-hearted and not want to become a kinder, more gracious, humble spouse. Yeah. It has the opposite. It's like, wow, no, I want to do that too. And so even if maybe your spouse is not seeing these things, is seemingly hard-hearted, if you begin to say, okay, I'm going to like put notes around the house, some visual cue that's going to remind me to encourage my spouse.
You should do that.
I should do it.
you should do that.
I should do that.
Just practice your own advice. That's so funny.
And just slowly, as that becomes a habit for you, as that becomes a shaping of your own character, it will impact your marriage.
It will. So beware the little foxes, believe in their goodwill. What can you encourage? And finally, and fourthly, breath prayers. So this is an interesting one. And you might say, how is this going to help me bring care before criticism? This just helps us turn those moments of frustration or maybe those desired hopes and dreams of what your marriage could look like into a prayer. Sometimes we don't always have the energy or the time to sit down and have a really long prayer session. And this is just a way to like incorporate throughout your whole day prayers. So give me a couple thoughts on that. And I have a couple thoughts as well.
Love the word breath prayer. I think I like even better the word pause prayer. Justin early talked about that because that makes me think of think before you speak, which I think is what we're getting at here, is when we can take a minute to think before we say something critical or harsh. Or just don't say the thing that communicates care and I believe in your goodwill and those things first. When we can take a minute and just pause or breathe and ask the Spirit, am I supposed to say this? Or God, would you help me have gracious words? Or whatever it is that is a phrase that comes to your mind of asking God to be there in that moment, to be with you and the things that are coming up for you, to be with your spouse, to be in the room. I just like that. To me, that word pause is very helpful. But it's the same idea of taking a breath. We have to pause in order to take a breath.
Well, yeah, the ancient breath prayer, the idea was that you would take the most classic one, you take a portion of scripture and take it with you throughout the day. The idea is that you can say it in one breath.
Yeah.
The most famous one is, Lord Jesus, have mercy on me, a sinner. That's the most like common one. But the idea is you can take a breath in and you can actually say that. And so I encourage you even to write your own breath prayers. God, give me gracious speech towards my spouse today. You know, that's one. God, give me the ability to bring care before criticism. God, help me respond well when others around me are not responding well. Like, and I would say to encourage you to even write your own, think about your own, think about how that actually plays out in your life, because that's a really big part of what we're talking about practically. It's like, how do you do that? Well, you have to bring the Holy Spirit into this. Yeah. It is not easy to do. Like, you try this on your own. I mean, in our experience anyway, failure every single time. Like, I can't just be a great spouse on my own. I really need the Spirit's help to step into loving you well. I can't. My job really with my kids, with my spouse specifically, is to allow God to love you through me. That's the goal. That's the idea. So how does God love your spouse through you, love your kids through you? And I think if you don't have a element of prayer, of dependence, of recognition that you do need help, I think you're just fighting an uphill battle in a lot of ways. It's making your life a lot harder.
Yeah, I think it's so good. I think that's, again, a practice that becomes a habit that shapes a character. But I just, think of, man, if you begin to practice this as just an individual, practice it in your marriage, practice it with your kids, practice it in your home. Mm. And that becomes the habit of your family, like letting your kids mm. into that teaching. I mean, I'm thinking right now of like our teenagers where there's some words just fly pretty easily, but even teaching them, showing them, hey, mom and dad are trying to practice this thing of breath prayers, of pause prayers, of thinking before mm. we speak. Let's practice this as a family, you know? Mm. And then what if that becomes a habit? And what if that becomes something, I'm thinking when Duke gets married and he's telling his spouse, hey, my family did this thing where this is how we would think before we spoke. We'd take a minute and take a deep breath and he's ask not God to listen. Help.
I'm just thinking of him and his wife listening to our podcast. How I hope they don't do that. That would be so embarrassing for them.
I know it.
And for us too, maybe. I'm not sure. So wherever you're at, bringing care before criticism is so essential. Beware of the little foxes. Believe in their goodwill. Find what you can encourage and practice breath prayers as a way to move through the world. And last but not least, and I just want to say this for any couple, both of you in a marriage get to give your spouse something that they need. Wives, you need certain things. Husbands, you need certain things. And when we give each other what we need, we're both given life in a new way. And so I'm going to say something that every single wife I do know needs and every single husband needs. So from this conversation, if you're listening to this together and you made it this far in the episode, you're going to get the bonus content, which is not really bonus content. It's just giving permission to do the things you need. So for the husbands, what I would love for you to do is find a moment and have an uninterrupted conversation where you listen to your wife uninterrupted and take interest in what's going on in her life and emotionally connect. And wives, make some space to make love to your husband, because these are two things that I know like are easy to joke about. Men often feel emotional connection through physical connection, and women often feel physical connection through emotional connection. Mm-hmm. And so that's often how we're wired. So give each other what each other need, and don't make it a burden, make it a gift. And wherever you're at, as you practice these things, we know, not perfect, like things are so, still, like mm-hmm. we have to deal with stuff on the daily, but we experience a level, I think, of joy and happiness that we didn't actually, I don't know if we ever thought was fully possible.
Yeah, well, I think a level of depth and relational intimacy, that's what these things lead to, is it doesn't mean, I would not say that in the last 18 years, our marriage has necessarily gotten easier. But I can say that it's gotten a lot deeper and the care that we have for each other is a lot deeper and more substantial. And there's different phases and different chapters. But overall, I can see it leading towards something deeper and stronger.
Wherever you're at, bring care before criticism, practice these things, and all the things won't be perfect. We do really believe they'll be far, far better.